with two Johnnies. It's Tuesday, the 26th of July, and this is Game On. Coming up today, England expects another Euros, another semi-final. We look ahead to tonight's big game for the Lionesses.
Can I just ask you, are this England team ready to go and make history?
The England team is ready to play the best game tomorrow against Sweden. And hopefully we inspire the nation.
And just on, sorry for bringing this up, but in history, England's women's team have never won a penalty shootout. So if it goes to penalties tomorrow, are England ready to win a shootout for the first time?
We prepared for everything. We've been talking about every scenario that can happen. So that's, I think we're totally prepared for everything, and then we'll see how it develops.
No pressure then. More on that shortly. And the Irish clubs in European action this week too. Then in athletics, Cathal Denny reviews a record-breaking World Championships.
Watch the clock. 51-41 is the world record. This is utterly staggering. Take a moment to savour this. We're watching a once-in-a-generation athlete performing at the peak of her powers. And it is a new world record. People in the stadium are on their feet. They're stunned. They're utterly stunned. And so is she. She has smashed the world record. How could she be that far clear from the second and third fastest athletes ever?
Plus, we'll have Damien Lawler on today's latest GAA manager news and rumours. If you want to get in touch or send us in the maddest rumours that you've ever heard, well, from a sports point of view anyway, you can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
GameOn2FM.
Welcome along. Paul Corrie and David Wilson are with me live in studio. Paul Corrie, former professional footballer, and David Wilson of RT Sport, to give you your full titles. Any mad rumours ever associated with you, Paul?
That's gone down a rabbit hole now.
Were you ever linked with any clubs and then didn't go?
Not that I can recollect, anyway. No kind of attractive ones, anyway.
Nothing you put out yourself?
definitely not.
A lot of Ronaldo rumours around, isn't there? He's been linked with every single club going now. I think that they're probably putting them out themselves to hope that somebody picks him up.
Yeah, it's hard to know who's going to take him. He was obviously linked with Chelsea earlier on in the window. It seemed like Tuchel didn't want him. Kind of he was touted with Juventus and Napoli. Doesn't really seem like there's any move on the cards for him. And I'd say it's a matter of where it's going to be a good move for Ronaldo and who's going to be able to afford his finances. And that seems to be the two main questions, I would say, because it's certainly clear that he's not going to be part of Manchester United's plans this year. And I guess he really doesn't want to be there. And when you kind of have that mix, it tends to only end up in one way. So interesting to see where he goes. He's obviously in the latter end of his career now, but he's certainly able to show in the last 12 months that he's still able to score goals. So he will be a good addition to the team that picks him up, but there's certainly a few questions of where he's going to actually end up.
He's had talks today, though. I saw on Sky Sports News they were following him and the cars and, you know, the convoy in to meet Ten Hag to discuss his future. Do you think he might stay, David?
The only reason why you think he might stay is because I don't think anyone can afford him. I was looking at a list of clubs that had been interested or the rumours of interest, but seems very kind of reminiscent of last year at Juventus when he had the meeting with Jorge Mendes and Andrea Agnelli, and he, you know, immediately cleared out his locker and got on a flight to Portugal and he was gone. And a few days later he was back at Manchester United when it looked like he could be going to Man City. But I think it's clear that Ten Hag mightn't see him as part of his plans. I know he's spoken publicly about that he is part of his plans, but he also did say that he's looking for a striker to boost his attacking options. So whether that is Ronaldo or not, I'd be inclined to say Ronaldo isn't the answer.
Well, Mendes went into training with him today, and I can't imagine he went in to tie his shoelaces. You know, like there was a reason he went in. So they're obviously trying to orchestrate a move. Mm. So the next 2-3 days would be interesting to see how that one pans out.
David's right, though. He generally doesn't stick around. You know, the private jet tends to land somewhere close to where he's going, and he's still there.
Yeah, well, the fact that he didn't attend the pre-season tour was probably alarm bells from that moment on, and he said personal reasons, so that kind of left a bit of a grey area as well. And listen, I think it makes sense for Manchester United. I think when you've got younger players looking to break through, the likes of a Jadon Sancho, if they've obviously invested in heavily, I thought his performances were probably hindered a bit with Ronaldo in the team last year. Ten Hag is obviously looking to change up the style of play, be a bit more dynamic in that final third. Ronaldo, latter end of his career, his legs probably aren't going like they used to it probably makes sense. But yeah, we'll see. Obviously, he's a club legend there, so it's a difficult one.
Yeah, we'll see over the next few days. It's been quiet enough, though, on the transfer front. We'll get into them a little bit later on. Let's turn our attention now to the Women's Euros. We're at semi-final stage, and interestingly, the four group winners are the four semi-finalists. So this evening, Sweden will take on England, and then tomorrow it is France against Germany. I'm finding it quite entertaining now, the whole narrative around England, David, and whether they're going to be able to cope with the pressure, and, you know, whether football is coming home. It's like it's just a replica of the way men's football is treated. And for long enough, we've been asking for that in many senses of it, and we're getting it from the pressure sense.
Yeah, the pressure is all on England, even though Sweden are number two in the world and have looked pretty decent in this tournament. And Ireland, we know all about them and how good they are. But yeah, England have a lot of expectation. There's a real sense that they can get to a final this time. They got a semi-final in the World Cup in 2019 and lost to the US. So they seem to have a fully fit squad. The manager's back from COVID. It seems like everything's going in the right direction. They came back against Spain and showed real resolve to dig that game out of the fire. And there's a real chance that he gets to a final, and we'll have to listen to Football's Coming Home for another while just yet.
Right, well, we're going to get into the preview in a few minutes, but I want to start by having a chat with Padraig Kerwin. He is the vice chairperson of Mooncoin Celtic. Well, 47 members of Mooncoin Celtic, the girls' side of the club, are heading over to watch the two semi-finals. So they're gone over for tonight's game and tomorrow night's game. Great planning by whoever put this in motion. A little bit earlier, I caught up with Padraig, and I just started by asking him how excited they are about the whole trip.
Oh, it's fantastic. The excitement has been building. We've been organising this for the best part of the year, and the last few weeks it's just gotten to fever pitch, obviously, with the games live on television and everybody really buying into what is a fantastic competition over the last couple of weeks. And particularly with the four teams that are left now in the semi-finals, it couldn't be better.
Yeah, certainly. So what great foresight you had as well to plan it, and now you're going to get to absolutely cracking games by the looks of it too. So tell me a little bit about Mooncoin Celtic, because, you know, we're talking about going to see four of the best teams in the world, and you don't expect there to be such a big Irish contingent heading over from the same club. Tell me how the club was formed and a bit about it.
Well, the club itself was formed just over 50 years ago, and really for most of its history it's been exclusively a boys club. Well, we've had some girls playing with the boys teams, as you'd find in many leagues.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really, we started the girls off 4 years ago, back in 2018, when we fielded our first under 14 team, and that team had more or less half the team at that stage were still on 10 years or younger. So we were really kind of struggling to begin with, but the attitude was great and the enthusiasm was clearly there. And over the last few years, notwithstanding COVID, we've really gone from strength to strength. So next year we're hoping we'll have an under-10 team, two under-12 teams, two under-14 teams, an under-16, an under-17, an under-19 team, as well as a women's team. So there's clearly a demand there amongst young girls and women for soccer. And it's amazing to think that it just wasn't being catered for so many years. And that's a story that's replicated up and down the country. And we're hoping now that with the exposure that the Euros has given the game to young women and young girls, that really the game is going to go from strength to strength.
That's amazing, the growth and the level of growth, because you do hear it anecdotally, but to speak to someone now who's seen firsthand and went through the process of setting up a girls' side of a club, and the knock-on effect being that you have all these new members there now and that there's equal opportunity for them to go and join a team and play, it must be really rewarding.
It is, and particularly after the year we experienced with the lockdowns and COVID, we moved to our new grounds in the centre of Mooncoin just over a year ago, just after we came out of lockdown. And to see hundreds of children, boys and girls, coming down for training in our new facilities was absolutely fantastic. And it's heartwarming to see that there's such fantastic engagement at all levels, at all age groups. And what we have now is we've brothers and sisters playing with the club, and everybody's just enjoying what is a fantastic game for everybody to join in. regardless of ability. You know, that's the great mm-hmm. thing about soccer. There's a level there for everybody. And we're very proud of what we've achieved over the last number of years, and we think we're just at the very start. There's so much more to come over the next few years.
That's it. It's really in its growth phase, and there's so much potential there. You must look at all these girls, though, and young women, Padraig, and wonder what they were doing before this. Like, what were they playing?
it is crazy. Though I know we're very much in GAA Heartland. Mooncoin is a very, very strong hurling club and camogie club, and earlier this year we were all delighted when the Mooncoin junior hurlers won the All-Ireland. So there certainly has been a huge amount of sporting activity there for many, many years. Camogie is extremely strong within South Kilkenny. But as I say, the idea that there wasn't soccer available to these mm-hmm. girls, and again, I suppose in many ways the structures are still trying to catch up in the girls' game to kind of provide a lot of the girls with the same level of opportunity as has been available to boys for many, many years. And I think that's one of the things we're very fortunate. Our chairperson, Kevin Dobbin, had the foresight 6 years ago to look at the academy structures that we had and to separate the girls out and say, let's concentrate mm-hmm. on the girls. Let's put structures in place that will enable them to move on to under-10s, 12s, 14s and so on. And we're very much reaping the benefit of it. We've been lucky over the last number of years to have a lot of people get involved on the coaching side of things as well. And as I say, the pleasure that the girls are getting out of it and the successes that we've had over the last year or so has been absolutely off the charts, far better and far quicker than we could have expected.
Yeah, it's amazing, really. And there will be people listening to this and who'll have been watching the Euros as well and you know, have little girls of their own or no girls that they know would like to get into soccer if they were given the opportunity. Like, what was the process like to get from where you started to where you are now, and what were the challenges that you had to overcome?
Oh, that's a really good question. I suppose the first thing was when Kevin made the call on the academy was to have a number of coaches who were really going to focus on developing the girls' game. And one of our coaches, who unfortunately can't be with us, Dee Travers, very, very much led that and was really to the forefront. But we were very fortunate within the club. We have a number of coaches with UEFA licences. We've Miguel Ponce Leon, Dick Long, Victor Bailey, and they've been really, really hugely supportive in terms of novice coaches, people who've never coached before, and particularly young women who've never coached before, getting them involved, because it's really important for young girls to be able to see female coaches, and you know, that it gives them something to aspire to. We're also very fortunate. We have one of our coaches, Sarah Corcoran, used to play soccer for Scotland and played for Glasgow Celtic, so again there was a role model there that the girls could aspire to. And I think that's what a lot of our girls now are aspiring to, and seeing the very, very top players over the next two days, it will just give them something more to kind of further their dreams, and kind of hopefully will lead to some of our players playing at the very top level in the years ahead.
Yeah, it sounds great anyway, and like, you've got a brilliant template there as well. And just on the coaching, because it is quite interesting, and you know, it's something that we've seen in the Women's Euros as well. There are a number of coaches there. We'd like to see more, but the ones that are there are doing really well, as we'll see over the next couple of days as well. Was it difficult to encourage the women to maybe step in from the sideline and pick up the whistle and get in and with a bag of balls and get involved?
So in some cases yes, but in some cases no. We've one female coach, Catherine Blackmore, who very much is the heart of the club on the female side, and particularly even in general. And she's been that kind of person who will drag people in, drag novice coaches in, and encourage them and provide support to them. And as I said, having three UEFA licensed coaches is a big help. But I'd also have to give a big shout out to Will Kinsella, who's the FAI Development Officer in Kilkenny. And he's been hugely supportive in terms of giving the coaches the skills that they need. Because it's all well and good having a passion for the game, but actually teaching kids how to play the game is not something that you can just kind of just make up as you go along. You have to learn the skills that go along with that. And Will has been absolutely fantastic in terms of developing skills for all the coaches as we've gone along.
I know I was working on the Euros, but I still thought it was great. But just from your point of view, and from the point of view of the girls that you coach and are involved, that are involved in the club as well, just for them to be able to turn on the television and to watch some of the best players in the world go out and give it their all against each other, how beneficial has that been, do you think?
Oh, it's absolutely critical because... like I know I've spoken about the game at grassroots level has been kind of struggling for many, many years. But equally, the game at the very elite level has really only taken off in the last number of years. And when we look back to the 2019 World Cup in France, that really was the first time you had a serious level of exposure for the women's game. And people were suddenly going, this is actually really good. It's not what I was expecting. And even from then to now, what's been very, very clear has been that professional football for women has really made the difference. When you have women who are training 5 days a week or 7 days a week, when they're doing this for a living, the skill level is off the chart. And we can really see the difference between 2019 and this competition. We're seeing women doing things that it just would have been unimaginable maybe 6, 7, 8 years ago, simply because they weren't doing this as a professional sport. It's now obvious that there's no reason why the women can't achieve the same level of ability as the men. And now what we're seeing with our girls is they have now something to aspire to.
Absolutely. And isn't it wonderful to see that as well? So tell me about the girls. So there's 47 from Mooncoin Celtic over there now for the next couple of days. How excited is everybody about what's to come?
Oh, they've been so excited for the last number of weeks. To be honest, I don't know who's been more excited, the children or the adults. You know, so it's been just a real build up for such a long period. We're very fortunate. One of our players, Ava Reese, is a fantastic striker for us at under 14 level. Her mother works for a company called Tour Partner Group, and they've been hugely supportive in terms of putting this trip together for us. And she's the one who had the foresight just over a year ago to say, look, why don't we try and bring a group of girls and the parents off to the Euros? And then when we realised that the two semi-finals were one day after the other, we thought that's a no-brainer. We'll bring them to that and we're going to be guaranteed to see the very, very best footballers in Europe. And so we've been planning this for a year. Ironically, the hotel we've just moved into now is directly across the road from where the English team are staying.
Oh, wow.
And our hotel, we're saying, is better than their hotel. But then again, we've known for the last year that we're going to be staying here. They didn't know until the other day that they were going to be staying there. So it's just that kind of anticipation. And as I say, it's just been building up for all of us for the past year. And with the ups and downs of the season that's just gone, mm-hmm. the whole way through, we've always had that positivity. At the end of the season, we're all going to go to the Euros and we're going to see the very, very best of players.
Well, it is so much to look forward to. Thank you so much for chatting to me, Padraig. Enjoy the next few days, and I'm looking forward as well to following the journey of Mooncoin Celtic.
Well, hopefully this evening you'll see a couple of Mooncoin flags, a few tricolours in amongst all the English flags on the far side of the pitch. So if you do, you'll know it's us.
Padraig Kerwin there, a very excited man heading off to the games over the next couple of days with all of those young girls and young women from Mooncoin Celtic, and what a trip it'll be. Let's get stuck into the games, Paul. So we're eagerly anticipating the England lineup. Serena Wiegmann has made no changes to her starting 11 in any of the games that she's played so far. She likes to stick to what she knows. Even when it comes to her substitutions, she tends to go with the same all the time. But against Spain, they really struggled. Do you think she's going to make changes ahead of this Sweden game?
It's an interesting one, and it's certainly going to be interesting to see what the 11 she goes with. I mean, there's probably two positions that you would say are potentially up for grabs. And I mean, first and foremost, you're looking at Ellen White. Obviously, she's done incredibly well whenever she's played for England. But I thought when they played against Spain, when Spain pressed high up the pitch, you probably needed somebody a little more nimble, a little more dynamic at the top end of the pitch. And she struggled to hold the ball up. She wasn't capable of running the Spanish in behind. And it meant that England were almost camped in their own half for the first 45 minutes. So I mean, Russo's come off the bench and she's done incredibly well. She had a number of goals and goal involvement. So she's banging form, maybe you do put her in and take Ellen White out, and maybe you do change that top end of the pitch. The second position that you're looking at is Rachel Daly, and she really struggled against Spain. Spain were obviously extremely good at, with the ball in the final third, moving the opposition around, but when it came to 1v1 battles, she got absolutely roasted on a couple of occasions, and she was one of the first off. And you would wonder if Eagman would be tempted to change her and bring in Alex Greenwood, who was probably a little more solid when she came in. So they're probably the two changes that you might look at making. I always think that you're probably better off kind of chopping and changing as the tournament goes through and freshening it up and maybe going with the in-form players as opposed to being a little more rigid and sticking with the 11. But Eagman looks as if she's happy enough to stick with the tried and trusted. But for me, I'd probably look at changing that left back and the centre forward position, because I think based on what we saw against Spain, it needs freshening up. Like, England weren't testing Marie in the group. Austria, they were poor in that first game. Obviously Norway and Northern Ireland, they absolutely swept aside, but you would probably would have expected that at least in the Northern Ireland fixture. And when they were really tested against Spain last week, they didn't come up with many answers and they were very lucky to get through that. And if they were to produce another performance like that, Sweden are good enough to beat them here.
Yeah, well, let's hear what Serena Wiegman has to say about Sweden, her opponents tonight.
They always perform on the highest level in tournaments. They've showed that years and years, and the number two of the FIFA ranking. So every game is different. Tomorrow is going to be a really tough game against a very, two opponents that are really equal. So I think it will be a different game than, for example, what we saw against Belgium. Yes, we're prepared.
Yeah, well, she's definitely the type of coach that does prepare for every scenario, although she almost came undone against Spain. But looking at Sweden, David, they are a team that they've been hit with illness and injury a bit and COVID and all the rest, like a lot of camps have been since this tournament began. They didn't start great, but they are growing into the tournament. And you think that maybe they will be able to carry some of that momentum and keep improving and will relish the test of facing England.
Yeah, I think playing the hosts in a semi-final, they might relish it. You know, they put the words in their jerseys about how to beat them. So I think they're going to, they'll be really up for it. I think Fridolin Rolfo and Blackstenius haven't really just set the whole tournament alight just yet. Rolfo did get a goal in one of the group games, but Blackstenius had two goals ruled out for offside with narrow calls. But They need to come to the fore tonight if they're going to beat England. England will be the best team that they've played so far. Aslani as well is going to have to step up as well tonight against England. And that goal that they scored against Switzerland, there was the three of those players that combined to get Rolfo into the space to score. So if they're going to cut England apart, those three players have to be unsung. But it should be an interesting game. And the pressure is all on England, I suppose.
And no doubt Peter Gerhardsen will have a game plan as well to face England and will have learned a lot from how they faced up against Spain. Let's hear from him.
When you think about the game plan, it's some different. We talk about England's game against Spain. I see that one. And then we meet Belgium. And then to put these together, it's very difficult. So you have to think about, yeah, we haven't met England for 2019. They have a new coach now. I can think that it's more for us to look at the game against US in the Olympics, because I think England and US, they kind of very good players, good tactical, and play in a similar way. And then you're thinking about the match plan, what can suit us but can be difficult for England.
What about the pressure, Paul? Do you think they're going to be able to hack it, just given how, look, even the first game against Austria, they were really nervous and they were lucky enough really to come away with the win when they did. And then against Spain, for most of the game, they were at sixes and sevens and couldn't really get it together. And as the tournament goes on, the pressure is building all the time.
Yeah, it's probably a question that they haven't quite answered yet, because I think when the pressure really came against them in Spain in that last fixture, both the pressure, the occasion, and the pressure that Spain put on them, pressing from the front, a lot of the time they didn't have the answers to those questions. And it's a difficult one for them, because I mean, the media go on over in the UK as if this is a foregone conclusion that they're already through to the final and they should come through against Sweden. But based on their last performance, that doesn't suggest that this is going to be a walk in the park. There is obviously a lot of pressure with the home crowds and the expectation and the investment that's been put into the women's side of, or into, I guess, English football as a whole, but also into the women's game, that they want to start now to see trophies at the end of these tournaments. They've done incredibly well over the last 8 to 10 years with regards to getting to the latter end of competitions, semi-finals and also finals, but they now need to go and win. And whether it be the men's team or the women's team, when you get to the latter end of these competitions, that is going to weigh on the shoulders of these players. They should have too much tonight, particularly when you look at the players just that they have at their disposal. I think, you know, when you look at the likes of a Beth Mead and a Lauren Hemp, they have endless class when they get going. It's just whether or not they can get the ball to them and whether or not those players can actually show up tonight. If they do, you would expect that they have too much. But if Sweden can produce any sort of performance like Spain did, there will certainly be nerves within that England team. And if they can't get into the rhythm of their play, you could start to see a couple of shaky performances and question marks within the squad.
And ahead of that Spain game as well, there was so much conversation about both teams wanting and liking to dominate possession. It was Spain that came out on top in that front. You would think that this time around now against Sweden, that England would have more of possession. Wiegmann and Millie Bright were asked about this in their media duties. Let's hear what they had to say.
I think both. We want to have the ball, but sometimes the game is goes or develops the way that sometimes you have to leave the ball a little to the opponent. That depends how it relates to each other. But we know we want to have the ball. And I hope when we have the ball that we're tight and we're calm. But we also go forward and create some chances, and we hope we can do that a lot tomorrow.
A question for Millie, please. A lot of the Sweden players have talked about this game maybe suiting them more than the Belgian game, a little bit more open and a chance to counter. Is that something you've thought about and talked about, especially you as a centre-back, just being aware of that counter-attacking threat and maybe not playing too high tomorrow to let them expose that?
I think we're aware of their threats. Obviously, we've done our analysis and, you know, we prepare the same way for every single game. And I think every team poses a threat counter-attack-wise. But, yeah, ultimately, no matter the opposition we play, we want to be tidy at the back and we want to be hard to beat. So, yeah, in that respect, nothing changes for us.
You think that that's probably what both teams want, David, that they both want to be tidy at the back and hard to beat and hard to break down. And, you know, just given what Paul was saying there about Mead and Hemp, it would probably make sense for Sweden to set up a little bit differently.
Yeah, there looks like that Sweden are going to revert to a back five and have Rolfo a little bit inverted in behind Blackstenius and try and play in a counter-attack a little bit. Both of them are quite quick, Blackstenius especially. That could be maybe somewhere to try and expose England's lack of pace at the back. And maybe invite England on with the ball and try and punish them out of possession. So it should be an interesting game. It's live in RT2 and it's set up for a cracker of a game. Number two in the world against the hosts. It's going to be an interesting one for sure.
As well, Germany and France tomorrow night as well, Paul. And both of them have been really entertaining. Germany in particular, because there was so little talk about them heading into this tournament, yet they've been doing what all German teams do really well, is getting the job done without any hassle.
Yeah, they have, and we probably shouldn't be too surprised about that given what you've just said. But I think what's been so impressive with the Germans is just how efficient they've been in all of their performances. You know, they're yet to concede a goal, which obviously gives you a very good chance with any game you go into, but I think they've shown that they can probably play in a number of different ways. You know, my thoughts go back to that Spain performance where they were just sat in, they frustrated the Spanish, and then they were so quick on their counter-attack. And they've got so much power, it seems, in the final third that they can cause teams a lot of problems. So they're probably one that, yes, have gone a little under the radar and can certainly pose a threat to the French team in that semi-final. I'm going to stick with France. I tipped France at the beginning of the competition, Marie. Just the fact that there's such a strong contingent from Lyon, used to being at this stage of competitions, used to getting over the line, and know how to win games of football when the pressure is really on them. So that one for me will be a really exciting fixture. Just want to see how the Germans set up against the free-flowing French. Maybe they'll sit in, look to frustrate and hit on the counter-attack, and whether or not France can kind of bring that flamboyance that you tend to see when they're really kind of in their groove. So it's going to be super tight, you know, both semi-finals are going to be extremely well poised and balanced between the two sides, and it'll be certainly interesting. We'll see how they get on. I still fancy France from here to go on and win it. I think they've got a lot of quality, and when they've really clicked in this competition, they've looked really strong. Maybe not as strong when the performance hasn't been great, but yeah, I think they'll go on and win it.
No Katoto though, and that's a really big position to fill. She's played Mallard there quite a bit, but hasn't really seemed to get the same impact. For Corinne Diac, David, do you think that she's going to have a lot of, I guess, does she have the options up front that she needs to try and defeat a Germany?
Well, I suppose the game on Saturday against the Netherlands, it was Cascarino that was the most dangerous. She was excellent, could go off both sides, great pace, great end product, and Diani on the other side, who was ultimately brought down for the penalty, played really well as well, and she was moved from the right wing into a centre forward position, and probably did better up there than Mallard. When Selma Bashir came on, you know, she added a bit more creativity. She kind of occupied that space between the back four and the midfield, and had a couple of good efforts from long range. I think she had the most assists in the Champions League this season as well. So she's another option that could play in those forward positions. The thing about Germany is that they press the ball really well against Austria, and they kind of encouraged Austria to play out, and then that's how ultimately got the second goal to wrap the game up when Pop pressed the goalkeeper and it deflected all in into the back of the net. So it's going to be really interesting games, two kind of contrasting styles, two nations that have a pedigree in international football. So I think I agree with Paul. I think France just edged it for me, but it's definitely going to be a close one. It could go to extra time again.
Yeah, we haven't had penalties yet, so they're probably due at some stage. Paul, tonight I'm heading to Tallaght Stadium after this one for the Shamrock Rovers Ludogorets game. They're 3-0 down heading into it. Any hope?
No, to be brutally
so just
honest,
don't even bother going.
Yeah, no. Like, I know, and I've read that some people have said that Shamrock Rovers came into the game in the second half last week, but I think a lot of that was to do with Ludogorets actually taking the foot off the pedal and just managing the first 90 minutes. And I mean, when they were really in their flow and in the first half last week, there was major gaps between the two sides with regards to the quality, and that's no disrespect to Shamrock Rovers. You know, Ludogorets have far greater resources. They're owned by a billionaire. I'm sure the wages and the transfer fees that this club are paying compared to Shamrock Rovers are on two completely different levels. So unfortunately, no, Marie, the third goal last week absolutely killed the tie in the last minute. Stephen Bradley's come out and said how disappointed he was with the naivety of the squad to actually look to play out. That's killed the tie. But what you're hoping now is that they can maybe put in a solid performance with eyes on the Europa League next week and see where they can actually take this European campaign, because there's still a massive chance for Shamrock Rovers to reach the group stages of either Europa League or the Conference League. So any sort of confidence that they can build towards that will certainly be beneficial to the squad. The one thing that I will say is Jack Byrne is still not fit, and that is a major question mark that I would have in and around Shamrock Rovers, because you saw last week when Graham Burke came on, he made such a difference. Jack Byrne would raise you another two or three levels, and they really need him fit if they are to reach that group stage. And I just wonder how bad that hamstring injury is that he has.
Yeah, it keeps coming back, doesn't it? That's always an issue as well. So let's just very quickly finish up then with the transfers over the last day or so. Well, the Irish interest transfers. Troy Parrott heading off to Preston, David. Another loan move for him. Is it his fourth now at this stage?
Yeah, it's his fourth loan move. It's his second back in the Championship after Millwall didn't go so well two seasons ago. It's a good move, I think. Ryan Lowe is the manager there. He plays a kind of a fluid system with three at the back. It'll allow Troy Parrott to play on the left and on the right and behind, and maybe even up front as well. He's joining an Irish contingent there of Robbie Brady and Alan Brown and Sean Maguire, Greg Cunningham as well. So hopefully it's a good move for him. The style of manager should be a good fit for him as well. He did well previously at Plymouth, and now he's got the job at Preston. But you know, the games are going to come ticking fast in the Championship. They're starting Saturday against Wigan.
Saturday.
Yeah, already. So it's a big opportunity for him, and from an Irish perspective, we need him to do well and to play every week.
Yeah, for sure. And anything else? I was just glancing at them over the last 24 hours. Cristiano Fitzgerald to Dundee. Andy Lyons maybe to Blackpool.
Yeah, Cristiano Fitzgerald is an interesting one. He grew up, he's at Boa Vista. I remember to play Manchester United maybe in the early 2000s in a Champions League game in a qualifier, I think. But I'm not too sure about him, but I know he's worked with Tom Mohan and their under-19 team, and I know Tom has done a lot of scouting with kind of the Irish diaspora. So I remember Riyad Mahrez speaking in a podcast once about being turned down by three or four different clubs in Scotland, and he went on to be a Premier League winner. So, you know, the same might happen for Cristiano Fitzgerald from our perspective, hopefully.
No pressure with that first name.
It's class, isn't it?
Yeah.
Right, let's take a very quick break now. We'll be chatting to Damien Lawler after these, and also Alan Cawley will be in studio tomorrow, fresh from his holidays, to look ahead to the other European games. Particularly, he'll want to talk about Sligo Rovers and Motherwell.
Game on 2FM.
Now it is time to turn our attention to Gaelic games. The men's season is over, and now it is time for all of the news, and there's plenty of it. So we have called Damien Lawler to bring us up to date on what's happening. Damien, news, give it to us.
Well, today's news, Marie, would be the departure of Mick Fennelly from Offaly. there's a few hours left in the day yet, so
yeah,
there could
exactly.
be more. Ever since Sunday, I don't know when I was last talking to Marie last week sometime, but ever since Sunday, like, I think we had two or three departures on Monday or different stuff like that. But Michael Fennelly, I think, which I just clarified with him earlier today, if he was finished with Offaly, that word that he had sent a message into the Offaly players WhatsApp group that he wouldn't be at the helm for 2023. So I confirmed that with him, put the story out, and then a few hours later, Offaly GAA put out a statement as well.
Okay.
And I think, you know, Mick will be in big demand, and Offaly will probably go now in a different direction. Michael Dignan is obviously at the helm there, Marie, and he's been doing a good job for Offaly, so it'll be interesting to see who they appoint next. But Mick had 3 years in charge. They won Division 2A and the Christy Ring Cup last year. They were unlucky enough not to make the Joe McDonagh Cup final this year. They lost out to Kerry on scoring difference. Some people would argue that they shouldn't have been depending on that last series of games to get through anyway. And I wonder if they got to the final would be a different outcome. There's a hunger in Offaly to get back into the Lee McCarthy Cup proper. 2018 was the last time they were there, Marie. I don't think the pool of players is sufficiently strong enough to be there yet. But anyway, the decision was made, and Mick is stepping away. It'll be a new manager at the helm in Offaly for 2023, and Mick will be linked to all sorts of jobs in the coming weeks, and I'd imagine in the coming days even.
So Damien, there's a lot of jobs now. Is there enough managers with the relevant experience to fill them?
Yeah, well, there's not, you know what, there's not enough young managers, young coaches coming through being given a shot at this level. I would feel from talking to guys who have been there over the last couple of years, especially if you're with one of the stronger teams, you'd nearly need a career break from your actual job or profession to go at it and take it on for a 2 or 3 year period. I've definitely noticed the amount of managers stepping aside after 1 or 2 years definitely increased. So it's a good question you ask. There are young, I mentioned one of them last week, there are young up-and-coming managers that I would rate very highly, like David Herity in Kildare, Tom Mullally in Carlow, you know, Joey Fortune's done a good job in Westmeath. I think he'd be linked strongly with the Dublin job, but I think those are the guys coming through, because you have your grade A picks, high profile picks like Davy Fitzgerald, like Eddie Brennan, you probably have Derek McGrath, you'd have, I don't leave anybody out, Marie, so you help me out, but Anthony Daly would be linked with the Dublin job as
Eddie
well,
Brennan.
Pat Gilroy. So who's that?
Eddie Brennan.
Eddie, and Pat Kilroy as well. So, like, he's been linked with the Dublin hurling job this time around again. So they're your grade A, but I would feel that, you know, there's a dearth maybe of opportunities for younger managers coming through. Leo O'Connor, for example, would have done a stellar job in the Limerick Academy over the years. He's after leading Offaly to the All-Ireland Minor Final. And, you know, would he be in for a shout with the Offaly job now? Or would he be content to stay with the under-20s? Equally, Brendan Cummins, you know, is making good shapes underage. James Woodlock. But from a Tipperary point of view, like, we've a load of managers outside the county coaching, like Darren Gleeson's up in Antrim, Darry Egan's over in Wexford. Lean Cahill was with Waterford, excuse me, until last week. And I think that, you know, they probably had to, probably felt they had to go out to get opportunities as well. So small enough pool. I think the hurling industry, hurling world is small enough too, and they know who's who, and they know who's good, and they know who's great. And I think some counties will struggle to get the right characters or qualities appointed.
From a Dublin point of view, there is a vacancy in the hurling side of things. We're not sure about the football. There are rumours flying around Desi might be stepping away. Is there any county board meeting scheduled or anything like that for Dublin over the next while?
Well, no, not over here. Like, I mean, I'm led to believe that the Dublin board would be open to Desi Farrell if he wanted to stay on, but I'm also led to believe that he may not want to stay on, and that, you know, certainly the indications are, and geez, I hate dealing in rumour, Marie, because it's just against this job of ours. But there is speculation out there, and like it was there for Brian Cody for a full week before he stepped down as well. The indications are like that Desi Farrell might step away, and that, you know, the likes of Declan Dorsey and Mick Bowen could be involved in a new setup. So they've had a bit of time to reflect on that now. Division 2 football next year would be the perfect opportunity to blood new players and get them up maybe to the level required for the next year or two. It also would be a good opportunity for maybe the veteran players to be given a break and not to be called in until the latter stages of the league, because Dublin should really cruise through Division 2 next year. There are names being mentioned there with it, but until the Dublin board come out and make a statement, it just remains conjecture then as well. With the Dublin hurling one, that's a little bit more interesting because, you know, I mean, I mean, definitely been informed there who is interested or who's been mentioned. And, you know, the names involved are quite intriguing. Like, certainly in terms of being spoken about, Davy Fitz, Eddie Brennan, Joey Fortune, Pat Gilroy, and even Shane O'Brien to form part of a coaching ticket there as well. So that'll be very, very interesting. It's a crucial, crucial call for the Dublin hurlers next. Also crucial to make an appointment early so the manager can see the club championships unfold and do everything he has to do to get Owen O'Donnell back in that camp. Because Owen O'Donnell's an out-and-out hurler. He's also a really good footballer. But if Dublin hurlers have any hope of progressing, they need to keep the likes of these guys. And it's going to take, in my opinion, it's going to take a very strong personality to go into that Dublin job and take it on and get them players up to the next level, because you're quite a challenge there, not in terms of ability, but in terms of consistency and maybe a long-term vision, because they've gone off the boil a little bit in recent years, and that was not the case a decade ago. They were quite progressive at underage level as well.
I think the word is probably engagement, Damien, you know, just trying to engage people within the county with the sport as well. That doesn't seem to be the case.
You know it yourself, Marie. You know it yourself. Like, I mean, like the amount of kids going around carrying hurleys now that like didn't previously. And you know the numbers involved in Dublin clubs. You've seen it there with Jude and the lads.
Do you know what I find, Damien, that when the lads are going up to football training, they're wearing their Dublin jerseys. When they're going up to hurling training, they're wearing their Kilkenny, their Clare, their Waterford, their Limerick. So it's just trying to bring people back connected to Dublin hurling again. And a strong character, I think, would definitely do that, because there's so much potential there. It's just it's just making it all click
and
again.
And Anthony Daly would have certainly kick-started a lot of that the last time out. Now, whether Dalo is interested or not, I don't know. Like, that's a question for him, but he's an awful lot going on outside of that, you know.
And it's a long way from Clare to here.
it is. And like, I think he's quite busy with everything, but it will be interesting, Marie. Like, you need Offaly back at the hurling top table. You need Dublin back at the. I want to watch out for in the coming weeks too, Marie, is the underage setup and what's happening there. There's all sorts of focus and introspections and investigations into what way we go forward with our underage grades. Like, will under 17 go back developmental, solely developmental? Will 20 and 21 survive, or will they just bring in under 19 grade solely to cater for the underage? So watch out for that in the coming weeks. That'll be another talking point too when it happens, and it's crucial to get that one right too.
Okay, well, Damien Lawler, keep your phone on, because we'll need to talk to you lots over the next few weeks. And
you'll give me time to go on holiday, surely. Marie,
a small one.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah, just keep between 6 and 7 every day free. Don't mind that training that you'll be doing with the teams, all right?
Grand.
Thanks, Damien. Marie. Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Game on 2FM. Welcome back. Paul Corrie and David Wilson are with me in studio. Paul, we have an England team.
We do, and we have the same England team.
As I said to you just before we come on air, go way out of that.
No changes again for Wiegmann and this England side. So she's obviously going with the tried and test, and maybe she feels the likes of Russo are better off the bench and more impactful off the bench. But yeah, she's gone with the same 11 to play against Spain, who were, let's say, unflattering to say the least. But yeah, so that means Lucy Bronze right back, Rachel Daly, Millie Brighton, Leah Williamson. Then we've got Lauren Hemp, Georgia Stanway, Beth Mead. The way they've done this team is difficult. Lauren Hemp, Frank Kirby, and Ellen White. So Ellen White retains her position.
It's as you are then.
As you are, yeah.
So she'll make the same changes that she always does then throughout the game.
Yeah. So, I mean, they've worked.
Could possibly go wrong?
Yeah, they worked well for her against Spain, and she did ring the changes, to be fair to her, when she needed to. But I'm sure the Swedes will have probably set up for that and they'll prepare for that team. So it'll be interesting to see how it goes.
Really well. Okay, it is now time to join Cathal Denny, athletics journalist. Cathal, I've no idea where in the world you are. My phone line is telling me you're in North America somewhere. Am I correct?
You're right. I'm still in Oregon. I love this so much. I can't leave.
Look, I know you've been really busy working hard at the World Athletics Championships, but the one question I have for you, the most important question is, did you defend your media title?
I did not, Marie. Unfortunately, I finished a failure of a fifth place finish.
Fifth place?
No media medal whatsoever this time.
God. How you have fallen.
I know, shocking. Out of form.
We might need to do a bit of video analysis on this in time, but not on this show because we only have about 5 minutes left and I need to get through a whole championship. Let's start from an Irish perspective. You seemed relatively happy with how Ireland did overall.
I think so. I think what we had really was a lot of the kind of second tier, I suppose, team, if we were to split the team into sort of the real contenders for finals and then the others who were kind of just, you know, maybe hoping to make it out of their heats and stuff. I think a lot of the people who were hoping to make it out of their heats probably underperformed and, you know, fell below their expectations. Not all of them, obviously, but some of them. And then I think a lot of the kind of A-listers among the team did perform. And I'm speaking there, I suppose, specifically of Rashida Adeleke and Mark English. You know, they were 9th and 10th in the world. Two really good performances that fell. I think Rashida was 0.16 off the 400 metre final, which is nothing. You know, you're talking about just over a metre in a 400 metre race. And Mark English was only 0.2 of a second. That's less than 2 metres, like in an 800 metre race, off making the final. So both of them were knocking on the door of global outdoor finals, which, looking down the line to the Paris Olympics in 2 years, speaks very promisingly. And then Thomas Barr, Andrew Coskeran, again, they'd be two of the people who would have went there hoping to make the final. Thomas ran a brilliant heat, ran a poor semi-final. He made one mistake, and at that level, one mistake, he was lights out, basically. But he thankfully will have the Europeans, and much like Thomas, Andrew Coskeran, the 1500 metres, ran probably the best championship race he's ever run in his heat to go through in second place. But then the semi-final, whatever it was about his recovery, couldn't come back and repeat it, and had a below-par effort in the semi-final. And then the mixed relay as well, again, making a world final was very impressive from them to finish 8th. They didn't run their best in the final, but to get into the world final is brilliant. Again, that's the second straight global final they've made, and I suppose 3 if you add the world relays last year. So, yeah, I think all round, obviously no medals, but, you know, coming here, there was, I'd say, a 99.9% chance no Irish athlete was going to win a medal, and given especially Thomas Barr missed about a month's training coming in. So all in all, I think otherwise it was relatively positive, you know, not like a 9 out of 10 or a 10 out of 10 performance, but certainly not a letdown either. You know, I think it was a good 7 or 8 out of 10 for the Irish in terms of meeting the expectations.
Yeah, that's not too bad. And I think as well, when you throw in the fact that there was some pretty amazing performances there and the stars really shone, it seemed.
Yeah, I mean, you're thinking, I think he had 3 world records. Toby Amundsen in the 100 metre hurdles, Sidney McLaughlin in the 400 metre hurdles, and then Mondo Duplantis in the pole vault. You know, 2 of those 3 came on the last night. And yeah, I think Sidney McLaughlin and Mondo Duplantis, they're 2 of the, you know, they are the Usain Bolts of this generation. They are the, like, I mean this in the most complimentary terms, they are the athletic freaks of nature, I suppose, that have come up ever since the age of 12, 13, 14. They've just been like outliers amongst outliers. They've just dominated. They've broken all the records on the way up, and now they're doing it at senior level. They're breaking all the all-time marks. The 3rd world record was set by Tomi Abusan of Nigeria, and people didn't really see that one coming. You know, a lot of people, Michael Johnson included, took to Twitter wondering if there was something wrong with timing equipment, because as I wrote in The Independent today, it was like a video game time that she ran 12-12 in the semi-final and then 12-06, which wasn't win legal. It was assisted by a tailwind in the final, but still, it was a massive jump because she's never broken 12:40 before, so that was out of this world kind of improvement, and kind of had a lot of people wondering if something was wrong with the equipment or something was wrong.
Shoes? Is it the shoes?
The shoes are certainly playing a role. I asked Toby Amazan at the press conference what she thought about the shoes, and she seemed a bit indignant. She said, you know, my talents are not centered around spikes. And I understand fully why athletes get a bit defensive when you mention the shoes, because it kind of plays down their own achievement. But I always think if I was being paid, you know, five or six figure sum by a sponsor after a big achievement like that, I'd be shouting from the rooftops about how great these shoes are. You know, you might get a bigger bonus next year. Athletes tend to get quite defensive, so she did get quite defensive to suggest that the shoes did play a role. But, you know, from having interviewed an Adidas coach, and she is an Adidas athlete, spoke to Lance Brownman, who coached a couple of gold medalists at these championships last week, and he reckons that the current generation of spikes versus what was available maybe 3-4 years ago is worth about 7 to 10 hundredths of a second over 100 metres. So I suppose when you factor that into Toby Amazan's time, she broke the record by 0.08 of a second. Maybe it's not so out of this world, and relative, given the old world record was running in the old technology, maybe it's about in line with what the old record was. But yeah, I think any objective person looking from the outside, you know, there's no denying that the spikes are making a difference.
So, Cathal, what you're saying is that the four athletes that finished ahead of you in the media race were in the spikes, is it?
They were, Marie. I wore the old school spikes. I feel cheated. But yeah, I think I just have to get on board and join the new generation and maybe find a spare 150 quid around to buy some super spikes.
Well, look, maybe if you had defended your title, some big company would have given you a five-figure sum as well to wear them. Cathal, thank you. And I have to say, I enjoyed your coverage as well over the last few weeks. You were a credit to the profession of athletics journalism. So thank you very much for all of that.
Thanks, Marie.
Thanks, and I will talk to you soon. That is all we have time for this evening. Don't forget that game between England and Sweden is live on RTE television this evening. I will have to put it on record because I'm heading off to Tala Stadium. David and Paul, thank you very much for coming into studio. Great to have you.
Thanks, Marie.
Tara Kumar is up next.